Let's take a real quick look at five areas that you're going to need to focus on in your life. Five areas where you're going to need to change the R's, the responses to how you've been, in order to have high self-esteem. And these are what we call the five aspects of your personality, the five psychological functions, if you will. And they are your mind, your imagination, your emotions, your body, and your intuition. In order to have high self-esteem, with the mind, we're going to have to learn how to be positive and have a positive focus. We're going to have to use affirmations. We're going to have to change our self-talk and look at our beliefs, create positive belief systems that support us. In our imagination, we have to have positive pictures of ourselves, positive pictures. We use visualization so we can change our self-image, the image we have. In our emotions, we're going to need to accept them, learn that it's okay to express them in ways that don't hurt other people, and also learn not to be run by our emotions so that we're in charge. And then finally, learn how to stop producing negative emotions like guilt and resentment. With our body, we're going to need to learn how to love it and accept it as it is. If it's overweight, out of shape, got a big nose, whatever it is, we have to learn to accept it just the way it is right now. And we need to learn how to nurture it and take care of it and express love through it and to move it, to feel pleasure in it. And then with our intuition, we need to learn to trust it, trust that still, small voice we hear within. And then there's also a part of ourself we call the high self, the spiritual self, the essence of who we are. Let me give you an example about that part of you. I was reading a book that was given to me by a friend of mine. It was called Life After Life by Dr. Raymond Moody. And Raymond Moody was a medical doctor. And what he found was that he would do operations on people in a hospital, as he was an intern and a resident, and sometimes people would die. And then occasionally, you know, like a minute or two later, after you see in the movies, you know, where they pump on the heart and they inject stuff and they're going code red or code blue or whatever, and then the person would come back to life. And he was curious that while they were dead, had they experienced anything? And so he started kind of going up to people when no one else was around, saying, you know, you were dead for 3 minutes. I'm wondering if you remember anything about what happened when you were dead. I mean, no one would ever ask anyone a question like that, right? But he did. And what he found out was that all the people he asked, which eventually was 57 people that he interviewed, had the same kind of experience. As soon as they would die, they would leave their body, they would float up to the ceiling of the room, they would either be looking down on the automobile accident or the operating table, and they would say, I'm up here, no problem, no pain. And then the next thing that would happen is they would be pulled through a dark tunnel. And at the end of this tunnel was a being of light. Christians saw it as Christ, Buddhists as Buddha. People that were not particularly religious would see it as a source of light or a pulsating energy field. And then they would be asked two questions by this being. First question was, what have you learned in this lifetime? What wisdom have you garnered from your experience? The second question was, how have you expanded your capacity to love? Are you more loving now than when you came in? And then they would get to see their life pass before them again. They would get a review. And I realized as an educator, there is a final exam. There's two questions. And it's a take-home test, okay? And people that I've met since then that have told me they've had a similar experience, because I talk about this a lot in my workshops, have said the most painful moment in their life was watching their life pass before them from the perspective of all the times they withheld love from people. Because the essence of who you are is love, to love yourself and to love others. Then they would be told it wasn't time to die, and then they would come back and they'd be in a coma or out conscious or whatever, and then eventually they'd come back to normal waking consciousness. And I realized that perhaps this gives us some insight into the purpose of life. The purpose of life being what? To expand our capacity to love and to gain wisdom from our experience. And it lets me know that there's something beyond my body. There's this spirit, this essence, this consciousness that exists that I also can tune into. And when I'm in touch with that part of myself, it raises my self-esteem because I realize I'm more than just this body that I'm in. The deepest part of who we really are is what we call our high self. And it's the part of us that is beyond our body. It's beyond our mind. It's beyond our emotions. It's the part of us that when we meditate or pray, we get in touch with. People talk about having out-of-the-body experiences. Well, what is it that goes out of the body? It's certainly not your body. It's not your emotions. And it's really not even your mind. People have had this experience of watching their mind go by. People have had this experience of being angry. and you're ranting and raving at someone, and then you hear this, you kind of almost step out of yourself and you see yourself being angry and you go, boy, I'm really angry. And that's that centered part of us. It's our self with a capital S. What exists in that self are what we call the higher qualities, like love and joy and compassion and justice and fairness. We have this high self that if we tune into it, is the source of our wisdom. It's the source of what we really need to be expressing right now. And the way I look at my personality is that my high self is kind of like the band director. And it knows what the music is, and it knows what needs to be played. And then my body and my emotions and my mind are kind of like the instruments in the orchestra. And so what I like to do every day before I start my day is to just sit for a moment and kind of tune in to my high self and say, well, what are we about today? And it might say something like, doesn't matter what you do today, just do it lovingly. Or it might say, today we really need to focus on your family. You haven't spent enough time with your kids. And so it kind of gives me the curriculum for the day, the agenda. And then I use my body and my mind and my emotions to act out the script that I've been given from my high self. You can get in touch with your high self a number of different ways. Some people actually hear voices. You know, it's kind of like you're talking to yourself and you hear a deeper voice that says, you know, do this. Some people, it's more like a feeling. You know, this is what feels right today. Some people, it comes in the form of an image. So you can get impulses, if you will, from your high self as visual things. You can get them as sounds, like internal auditory voices, and you can get it as a feeling sense. We're going to talk about this a little later in the program, but I want to just mention it now, that each of you has what we call a life purpose, a purpose for being here. Like a carnation, when it grows up, becomes a carnation, and a rose becomes a rose, and they can't become each other because inside them is the seed of that essence, the DNA is laid out. And so the same is true for you. And in order to have high self-esteem and be effective, you need to get in touch with your life purpose. Companies have mission statements and purpose statements that give them direction as to what they should be doing. We need to be in touch with that in ourself. And when we tune into our high self, we can get in touch with that. Let's look at the most powerful, perhaps, of all the functions, and that's our mind. How many of you talk to yourself? Can I see a show of hands? Almost everyone in the room. One guy didn't raise his hand. He's sitting back there going, do I talk to myself? I don't think I talk to myself. Wait a second. Psychologists tell us we think 50,000 thoughts a day, between 1 and 5,000 thoughts an hour. And many of those thoughts are about ourselves. I shouldn't have said that. I didn't dress right. What's wrong with me? I'm not smart enough. I'll never get that job I want. No one respects me. The economy isn't right. No one understands me. I'll never get organized. And I know none of you have ever thought thoughts like that, right? But we think like that all day long. And what happens is, it affects us. What I'd like all of you to do right now is to repeat a sentence with me. I'll say the sentence, and I want you to repeat it back and say it with real feeling, like you really mean it. I totally and unconditionally love and accept myself just the way I am. Everybody? I totally and unconditionally love and accept myself just the way I am. Now, I notice a few heads kind of nodding and some looks of disbelief on your faces and stuff. That statement is probably the most powerful statement you can say to yourself. And what I would suggest to you as a little homework assignment, or if you're listening to this tape, you could even turn it off for a moment and do it now, and that is to say that sentence and then close your eyes, unless, of course, you're driving a car, and then notice what comes up inside of you. Like, yeah, not really, because I haven't lost all my weight yet. Or, no, I'll unconditionally love myself once I get that job. One of the ways to find out what you're holding against yourself is to say that statement and then notice what shows up. And then keep saying that sentence over and over until nothing shows up and you start to get that inner glow, that inner smile inside. See, it's important to create a positive focus in your life. Let me give you another example of positive focus. There was this little kid that goes out in his backyard and he takes a baseball and a bat. Have you ever seen little kids throw a ball up in the air and then try to hit it himself? And so he throws the ball up in the air, and as he's throwing it up, he says, I am the greatest baseball player in the whole world. And then he swings and he misses. Can't believe it. Picks up the ball again and he says one more time, I am the greatest baseball player in the whole world. And he throws the ball up and he swings. Whew. One more time, the ball's on the ground. He can't believe it. One more time, he picks up the ball. He closes his eyes, he visualizes and affirms he's going to hit this ball, and he says, I am the greatest baseball player in the whole world. He throws the ball up and he swings. One more time, he misses it. Then this little light goes on in his head and he says, I am the greatest pitcher that ever lived. So we have to have positive focus, okay? Always look for the positive. Do it in your favor. How many of you have ever compared yourself to another person? Can I see a show of hands? Almost every hand in the room. Keep your hand up if you've ever compared yourself to another person and came out exactly even. No hands. See, comparison is one of the things you have to stop if you're going to have high self-esteem. So we say that comparison is the fast track to misery because you'll never come out even when you compare yourself. If you're going to compare yourself at all, compare everything. Like if you're going to compare your tennis game to John McEnroe, you're probably not going to win, but at least then compare your emotional ability to not blow up, and you'll probably beat him on that score, okay? You might compare yourself to someone who's a better businessman than you, but they might not have a better relationship than you. Just be yourself. If you find yourself comparing yourself to someone else, just stop it. So one of the things we have to do is learn to control our self-talk and what we visualize and see in our mind. I was interested when I was watching the Olympics in Seoul, and Greg Louganis, the American diver, you know, who won all those medals. And most of you probably saw that on TV. Do you remember when he did that back dive and hit his head on the diving board? Some of us saw that replayed about 520 times, right? Well, the people that were filming that, you know, the TV company that was there, asked Greg Louganis if he would like to see a picture of that. And he said, no way. I never put a negative image in my mind. I don't ever want to even hold the possibility that Greg Louganis would hit his head on a diving board. So you've got to be real careful about what you program into your mind and what you look at and what you see. How many of you parents have ever done something like this? You say to your kid, go to your room and think about what you did. Right? And the kid goes through and they think about what they did. It was bad. Right? It's the exact opposite of what you want to do. You want to say, go to your room and think about what you should have done or could have done. You want to look at what's the possibility. Focus on the positive. Because when you focus on what you did wrong, it reinforces that. So we want to stop doing that and start focusing on what's right. One of the things we know is that energy follows thought. That what you think about comes about. And so it's very important to focus on the positive. Now, how do we replace negative thoughts with positive thoughts? Real simple little technique. When you catch yourself saying something negative, what I want you to do is say to yourself, either silently or if you're alone, you could say it out loud, cancel, cancel. So if you find yourself looking in the mirror and going, God, am I overweight? What are you going to say? Cancel, cancel. Exactly. If you find yourself talking to someone and you say to yourself, God, that was a stupid thing to say. What are you going to say inside?
Cancel.
Exactly. And then after you've said that, what you're going to do is replace the negative thought with a positive one. So if I say, God, look at me, I'm gaining weight, then I would say, cancel, cancel. Then I'd say, hey, I look pretty good, or I am my ideal body weight. Now that's somewhat kind of a lie, but we're going to talk about how that little lie actually will serve me to produce my ideal body weight. If I'm looking in the mirror and I say, God, you're getting old, okay, I'm going to say, cancel, cancel. And I can say, hey, I look pretty good. If I'm talking to myself about food, I shouldn't have eaten that extra piece of cake. I'm going to say, cancel, cancel. And I can say, I always eat what helps me maintain my perfect body weight. So you want to say the positive, because as we'll see later, the positive is going to set up the dynamic tension that will produce the motivation to produce what it is that I want. In my seminars, I give people statements to walk around the room and introduce themselves with. Like they might go up and say, hi, Anita, my name's Jack, and I'm enough. Or I might have them go around and say, hi, my name's Jack, and my needs are as important as your needs. See, or hi, I'm Jack, and I want you to love me and accept me just the way I am. And what happens is I have people practice with those statements over and over and over, like little affirmations, constantly focusing on the positive. One of the things I noticed about asking people to say my needs are as important as your needs is that people freak out, particularly parents and people that have older parents that maybe they're taking care of or their kids, whatever. And they think, God, I can't say that. But if your needs aren't as important as your kids' needs or your needs aren't as important as an older person's needs, you're going to get in big trouble. So you want to always affirm the positive. And if you've got an issue in your life where you've been negative, state the positive over and over and over. When you're running, every time your left foot hits, make a statement. Another thing is, what do you do when people put you down? when it comes from the outside. Someone says, "Ah, you're the dumbest person I ever met," or "I hate you, mommy," or "that report will never make it, you're fired," whatever. I teach people a little phrase that goes like this: no matter what you say or do to me, I'm still a worthwhile person. I'd like you all to repeat that with me. No matter what you say or do to me, I'm still a worthwhile person. So close your eyes for a minute, and we're going to say that for about 30 seconds. And after a few times, I'm going to yell negative things at you, like you're dumb, you're ugly, whatever. I want you to yell back in unison, no matter what you say or do to me, I'm still a worthwhile person. On the count of three. One, two, three. No matter what you say or do to me, I'm still a worthwhile person. Big smile on your face. No matter what you say or do to me, I'm still a worthwhile person. Stick your chin out when you say it. No matter what you say or do to me, I'm still a worthwhile person. You're ugly.
Oh, no matter what you say or do to me, I'm still a worthwhile person.
That's the stupidest thing I ever heard.
No matter what you say or do to me, I am still a worthwhile person.
Fatty, fatty, 2x4, can't get through the kitchen door.
No matter what you say or do to me, I'm still a worthwhile person.
You're fired.
No matter what you say or do to me, I'm still a worthwhile person.
Not tonight, dear, I have a headache.
No matter what you say or do to me, I'm still a worthwhile person.
Okay, open your eyes. Come on back to the room. Very good. See, what happens is that when people say stuff to you like that, all you have to do is really affirm inside it's not what they say or do to you, it's what you believe about it inside of you, and that they can't make you feel any way. See, all this is, cancel, cancel, and no matter what you say or do to me, is a way to replace the negative thought that you might go into agreement with them and say, yeah, I am, with the positive. One of the things I often ask people to do in a seminar is to get a partner. And in a moment, you're going to share with that partner for 90 seconds what you like, love, admire, appreciate, and respect most about yourself. Now, we normally call that what?
Bragging.
Bragging, exactly. Now, if you knew you had to do that, you had 90 seconds to do that, what do you think might show up inside of you?
Guilt.
Guilt, I hear. Fear. Fear. Concern.
Embarrassment.
Mm-hmm.
Pride.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the things that might create you feeling uncomfortable? In other words, if you started to say, wow, I feel a little uncomfortable doing this. Remember the little formula E plus R equals L? The E is the event. Jack Canfield says you're going to brag about yourself. The R is your response. The outcome is feeling uncomfortable. What would you have to tell yourself inside to be uncomfortable?
That's not acceptable.
That I'm not acceptable?
Yeah.
That I can't fill up 90 seconds?
No.
My mother told me, never brag, people won't like you. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of thing, right? So what happens is, this negative self-talk starts to come in and get in the way. And most people, I find, have difficulty bragging about themselves for 90 seconds. And yet you are full of wonderful things to talk about. One of the stories I love to tell is about a guy named Frank Szymanski, who was a football player at Notre Dame back in the 1940s. And he was very humble, never bragged, thought it was a bad thing to do. And one day he was called in as a witness in a civil suit in South Bend, Indiana, and they swore him in, and the judge said, Szymanski, I know I've heard that name. Where have I heard your name, son? He says, well, I play football over at Notre Dame, Your Honor. Perhaps you heard it on the radio or read in the newspaper. He said, that's right, Szymanski. He says, what position do you play? He says, I play center, Your Honor. He says, center? How good a center are you, Szymanski? Now, Szymanski at this point started to sweat, got all hot, was looking at the floor, was uncomfortable. And all of a sudden, he looked the judge right in the eye and he said, Your Honor, truth is, I'm the best center in the history of Notre Dame football. Now, that afternoon, Frank Leahy, who was the coach of Notre Dame, called Szymanski aside, and he said, Frank, is it true what I heard about you today? You were in court, and you said you were the best center in the history of Notre Dame football. How could you do that, son? It's so out of character for you. Szymanski started to swallow and got red again and got embarrassed, and then he looked at the coach, and he says, Coach, you know, I really hated to do it. He said, but after all, I was under oath. So I want you all to be under oath in your life to tell the truth about what's good about you. People are always afraid, though, that if they do, they'll become like a braggart and become obnoxious. So we're not talking about becoming conceited, but becoming a person that just tells the truth about the good news about you, who you are, what your strengths are, what your positive qualities and assets are. One of the exercises I recommend to people in my advanced seminar is to go home and make a list of 50 positive qualities. Now, that usually takes a day or two of thinking. And sometimes you have to ask friends, you know, what do you like about me? What do you see as my strengths? But if you come up with 50 positive qualities, it really enhances your self-esteem a lot. One of the things that can ruin self-esteem is what we call unrealistic expectations. I had a woman in a workshop in California recently, and she graduated number 2 from Caltech University. Her father came to graduation, and the only thing he said to her all day was, "Why weren't you number 1? Turned on his heels and walked away. You see, but not everybody can be number 1. I've always thought it was crazy. You know, you go to the Super Bowl, you're the second best team in America, but you lose by 1 point, and then you feel bad about yourself for a whole year. That's neurotic. That's crazy. See, it's an unrealistic expectation. How many of you have had the experience where you get 5 A's and 1 B on a report card? What do your parents say?
Why the B?
Why the B? Someone told me once they got a 98, and their father said, "Who got the other 2 points?" I mean, the reality there is 5 A's and 1 B. Way to go, kid. This is fantastic. That's the kind of response you want. But see, people take it for granted. We need to not let that kind of stuff affect us. We need to know that not everyone's going to be number 1, that it's okay to be number 2, it's okay to make a mistake, it's okay not to be the winner all the time. Remember again, no matter what you say or do to me, I'm still a worthwhile person, can be one of the responses. One of the things I had to learn early on was who I really am. And I used to think I was my accomplishments. In fact, I remember in my 30s, I was sending home every article I wrote and to my mother. "Look what I did, Mom. See, you know, then you'll love me. I'm enough now, you know." And I began to realize I'm not what I do. I'm not my achievements. If my self-worth is linked with my achievements, then I'm in trouble because I'm not always going to win, I'm not always going to be achieving. You see these people that lose their jobs when a corporate takeover happens, and all of a sudden, you know, you've got 55 executives out of work at the age of 50 or 45, and their self-esteem just, like, dies, you know, because they think they're their work. There's research about people who retire, and we find that when they retire, maybe within a year or two, they die, a tremendous number of people, because they think they're their job. Well, not only am I not my job, I'm not my roles. My role as parent is not who I am. We see the empty nest syndrome when women have their children leave home, and all of a sudden, if I'm not a mother, who am I? You know. And I had to learn I'm not my roles, I'm not my job, I'm not my body. You know, as we get older, we watch our body change, you know, and I realize I'm not my body. I feel like I'm still the same person inside. And I'm not my emotions, because my emotions are always constantly changing. And I'm not my thoughts, because there are things I used to believe 20 years ago that I would have fought for, maybe even died for, that I don't even believe anymore. There's something deeper inside of me, which I call my essence or my high self or just myself. It's really who I am. And I've come to love that part of me. And the weird thing is, when I love that part of me, it loves me back. And then there's this kind of synergistic love going on inside of me. I got a card from a person about a year ago, and it said, "You know, the love I give you is secondhand because I feel it first." And I discovered that anytime I want to feel love, all I've got to do is be loving. I don't have to wait for someone to love me. I can either love myself or love somebody else.